to section number three, item number two. This is our 11:45 a.m. scheduled informal interview for Dr. Lorenzo Gonzalez, DBM.
So we get the compliance on there?
Okay. Thank you. Okay, this is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dr. Lorenzo Gonzalez in case number 22-137. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 32-2234. Dr. Gonzalez, please introduce yourself and if you have an attorney.
No, I'll come by myself.
Okay.
I'm Lorenzo Gonzalez.
Perfect, thank you. Dr. Gonzalez, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censoring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all of the materials you submitted. If you have any additional new materials that you would like to present to the board, please do so now. Okay. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly, and that only one person speaks at a time. We will begin by asking the lead board member assigned this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board during this interview, you may ask them through me. Let's see, Dr. Wright, can you please give us a brief summary of this case?
Yes, thank you. On June 7th, 2022, Kane, a 1.5-year-old chocolate Labrador retriever, was presented to respondent for a neuter procedure. The procedure was performed and the dog was discharged later that afternoon. A short time later, the dog passed away.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Gonzalez, at this time, I would like to swear you in. Excuse me. Do you affirm that the evidence you are about to give will be the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
You bet.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Gonzalez, we would now like to give you the opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant in this case.
The one concern I have, first of all, they brought the dog in that morning. We took the dog in. Nothing happened. The whole surgery, everything went smooth as ever. I've been doing this for 45 years, and that's not the first dog I neutered, okay? Mm-hmm. Anyway, when I discharged the dog, I took Mr. Davis to the back. We took the dog in. I showed him the incision. I looked at the dog. The gums were nice and pink. Everything was okay. The truck was parked about 30 yards from my office. I watched Mr. Davis walk the dog to the truck, jump in the truck. So nothing wrong with the dog, okay? Anyway, Mrs. Davis called me at 6:30 that night that the dog had died. And she said they had just got home, but according to her letter, she said she got home at 4:30. That's an hour and a half later. And they live in Tonto Basin, okay? And it was in June. The temperature in the basin was in the high 90s. In Tonto Basin, it was like Phoenix, about 100, over 100 degrees. I think they stopped somewhere on the way home, and the dog, they left the dog in the truck because the dog was fine when he left the place.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with that dolphin there. According to her letter, she said they got home at 4:30, but she told me they had just got home at 6:30.
Okay. Did you have anything further, or would you like the board members to ask you questions
now? Ask me questions.
Okay. Would anybody like to start with questioning?
Yes, so thank you. I have some questions here. So starting with the anesthetic protocol, can you go through how you premedicate and anesthetize an animal?
Okay, I mix a mixture of xylazine, ketamine, and butorphanol. And I've been using that for over 40 years probably.
Okay.
And we have, without any problems. I give a sub-Q, put the dog in the cage, didn't fall asleep, and then put him on the table and intubate him.
So they fall asleep with the injection drug?
They're ready to be intubated when I put them on the table.
Roughly how long?
What do you mean?
How long does it take him to be ready to be intubated?
It depends on the dog. You know, you get a fat dog, it takes him a little longer to fall asleep than a skinny dog.
How long, roughly, though? I mean, you have a time frame.
10, 15 minutes.
Okay. Okay. And then you directly intubate him?
Yeah.
Okay. And then just go on with the procedure at that point?
Yeah. And then make sure they're under it.
Okay. So in the time frame here, well, actually, how do you calculate those drugs? Let me just ask you that.
It depends on the size of the dog, but it's 0.25 milligrams of butorphanol. Let's see, 6 milligrams of xylazine and ketamine. I've been using this for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. Same protocol. I haven't had any problems with dogs dying on that or anything.
Okay.
Because this dog walked to the truck, he was completely normal, actually. And then they call it, but I think they stopped somewhere on the way home.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering because on the pre-anesthetic drug sheet, it says the ketamine, the butorphanol, and the xylazine drugs, but on here, it says 1 mL/kg. I mean, we would be giving 30 mils of drugs. I'm assuming that wasn't given.
I saw that
on there.
She made a mistake on that.
Okay,
I figured like either 0.25 milligrams per kilogram of butorphanol. That's what I usually calculate.
Okay, yeah. So, because I mean, this shows a massive overdose, which would lead to a very sedate dog that
but
would probably die.
Instead of being an overdose, you'd have seen it right away. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean, it can lead to coma and eventual death with way overdoses like that. So I mean, is that a possibility that you gave 30 mils
something? No, there's no possibility.
Okay, so it's just incorrectly written.
Yeah.
Now, on the time frame here, it looks like the pre-med was given at 9 o'clock, and we didn't actually get into anesthesia until 9:40. What's the discrepancy there?
This dog's very, when you give it sub-Q, some dogs fall asleep pretty quick, some take a little longer. And this dog was a little on the heavy side, so he took a little bit longer.
Okay. So when I look at the general anesthesia record here, I'm not seeing time frames on here. I see isoflurane was given at a 0 hour, which, okay, that was the beginning of the surgery.
Yeah.
But in the same linear portion of a graph that's a little bit different, the recording of anesthesia is a different time frame. I mean, why is that? Why is there discrepancies?
I don't know. I don't do the recording. So I don't get that. Can you see?
Okay. Yeah. So it's in there is we have about a little less than 15 minutes of anesthesia time, but we have recording times of an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Or about an hour, I guess. It's just written over towards the 15 minute mark. So it took 40 minutes for the dog to go under initial sedation enough to intubate?
No, I don't think it went that long, maybe a half hour.
Okay, because like I said, it's different.
Like I said, it varies on the dog's condition. If they're fit, fat dogs take a lot longer to fall asleep than a thin dog.
Okay. So when the owner came to pick up the dog, it says that we went back and he helped you get the dog out of the kennel.
He did.
What does that mean?
Actually, at the time, their neighbor was in the office too, so Mrs. Davis and the neighbor, Cheryl Fogel, were visiting. Mr. Davis went to the back with me. We got the dog walked to the front, and I checked his gums, I showed him the incision, the dog hadn't been licking or anything. I always check. And if the dog's been licking himself, I send an e-collar with him, but on this dog I didn't, because he hadn't bothered his incision at all.
Okay. And was there any medications going home, post-operative
No.
pain medications or anything? So what do you do for post-operative pain control?
Yeah. I mean, they do pretty well. Well,
cutting off testicles is not something that's going to be painful?
Yeah. Yep, sure it is, yeah, but...
So you don't send home pain medication, though?
I normally don't.
Okay. All right, those are my main questions right now.
Okay. Do any other board members have questions for the respondent?
I have one question.
Yeah.
Yes, when you said that they loaded him up into the truck, did he go inside the truck or in the bed of the truck?
I didn't load him. I watched Mr. Davis through the window, and I actually paced it off just to see how far it was. It was like 30 yards from my office to where the truck was parked. The dog ran alongside Mr. Davis, jumped in the back of the truck by himself.
Into the bed of the truck or inside?
In the back seat.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So the dog was fine when you left.
Okay. So you can stay right there, just sitting right there. Miss Georgia Davis, I'm going to swear you in now, and it will be your turn to speak. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay, and then can you state your name for the record?
Georgia Lee Davis.
Okay, thank you. We have read the materials that you have provided, and you may now address the board.
I can tell you what I told you in the beginning. We took our lab to Dr. Gonzalez to be neutered. We dropped him off at 8:30 in the morning. We returned to pick him up at 3 o'clock, because we were told to return between 3 and 5. We arrived at 3 o'clock. We were told they had to check on Kane to see if he was ready to go. After a few minutes, they brought Kane out to us. We both said that Kane didn't look right. He was lethargic and foggy. I called his name and he went the opposite direction of me, into their little small lobby area, and slumped down on that wall and slumped off into the floor, did not respond to me. And I said, what's wrong with him? They took him back in. They brought him back out. He smelled like anesthesia. They said he was fine and ready to go home. So we had to walk him in together out to the truck, and we had to physically put him in the back of the truck. He couldn't jump up. He could barely walk. We helped him into the truck. We arrived at our home about 4:30 in the afternoon. He still smelled strong of anesthesia, and he still had difficulty walking. He told us to walk him in the yard that he'd get over it. He did not.
Yeah, he did.
We brought him in. I got a cool cloth, wet. I wiped his face to get the anesthesia smell off of him. Oh, my God. Kane lay down and could not get up. His back hips were already getting stiff. He died at 6:01 p.m. And I immediately called Dr. Gonzalez's office, and I left a message saying that he just died. What happened? We don't understand this. He's a healthy 1.5-year-old lab. We don't get it. I called he said the dog must have had a bad heart. Where is the blood work that you did before you did surgery? And why did you do surgery if you thought he had a bad heart? That doesn't even make sense to anybody. I called Graves Labradors, the place where I bought Kane, and she will give all the paperwork that proves that this dog is healthy. She will back us up. I don't know what happened, but I know something went terribly wrong.
Can you ask her if they went straight home or not?
No, hold on. So we'll get there. So now, Miss Divas, I'm going to ask the board members if they have any questions for you at this time.
Yes.
Hi, so this is Dr. Wright. I'm so sorry for your loss, but just some questions on that pickup time. So you came into the hospital, and did you go and help get Kane out of the kennel, or Kane was brought up to the lobby for you?
He was brought out to the lobby. We dropped him off at 8:30. We were there at 3:00 in the afternoon.
Okay. And he walked into the lobby, and that's when he didn't respond to you very well. You called his name. He looked in a different direction. What happened there again, if you can say that one more time?
He slumped against the wall opposite of me and slumped down on the floor. He couldn't get up.
Okay. And then they took him to the back to reevaluate him one more time?
Yeah.
Did you say, okay. Did they carry him back? Did he walk back? Or how did he get back there that you saw?
They came out and got him. Heather came out and got him and took him back.
Picked him up or walked him back, though?
A little of both. He wasn't walking.
So it's kind of
difficulty.
Okay, so kind of like guiding him back type thing?
Yeah.
I just didn't know how much support he needed, I guess, is my question. Sorry.
Well, holding on to him to help him walk back in there.
Okay. And then they came back out and said he was okay. How was he doing at that point? Did he walk out at that point, or what was going on when he came back the second time?
No, you could still smell the anesthesia. It was not out of his system, and he could not walk. We both physically helped him to get out the door, to get up to our truck, to assist him to get to the truck, and my husband lifted him into the truck. He couldn't walk into our house when we got here. We physically carried him in.
Okay. So he wasn't able to walk under his own power at that point. Okay. And
no.
So when you left the hospital, what happened after that? Did you drive straight home? How long was the drive? Where was he? He was inside the vehicle, inside the cab?
Yes.
Okay.
In the back of our cab.
Okay. Air conditioner was going. What was the temperature?
I can't tell you what the temperature was, but I'm sure as heck not going to leave him in anything too hot or too cold.
Okay. So the air conditioner was going in the car at that point?
If it was needed, it would have been.
Okay. And was there any stops on the way home? I mean, was there anywhere where he could have been left unattended in the car for a time, or was it a straight drive home?
He was never left alone, ever, in that truck. We got home before 6:00. I called him at 6:01 when he died, in my arms, in my dining room.
Okay. Roughly how long do you think you were home at that point? You might not have looked at clocks, but roughly how long do you think?
An hour.
Okay, so you might have gotten home.
Maybe slightly after, but that's it.
So you got home somewhere around 5:00, is what you're saying?
I'm guessing. I did not look at the clock, so I cannot give you an absolute. Nope. I apologize for that.
That's okay. I just wanted estimates, just kind of trying to make a time frame in my mind. Okay, those are my main questions. Thank you so much. I'm going to turn it over if anybody else has questions.
Do any other board members have questions?
Yes, Ms. DeBus, this is Dr. Thompson. I'm very sorry for your loss of Kane. I know that must be really difficult given how young he was and the shock for you. I just had one quick question. What type of food was Kane eating? What type of food were you feeding him?
Life's abundance.
And is that like different types of ingredients in that food, or is that something like you supplement with, or what type of food is that?
No, that's his main food.
Okay. Now is that like
raised on this through the vet. Through the breeder. It's the same food he got since he was able to eat dry kibble.
Okay, perfect. Did that have any grains in it, or was that like a different type of food?
Does it have other grains in it? Why don't you pull a bag in here and let me look at the back of it. This is what the breeder had been feeding and recommended,
okay.
And so we used it.
Yep, I hear
you. It's premium food. It's very expensive. It's premium food. I have to have it shipped here.
Is it marketed as grain-free? I think maybe that's what she's asking.
Does it say grain-free? They want to know if it says grain-free. Can you see that on there?
Going over DCM.
I'm asking my husband to go look at the bag.
Oh, okay, thank you.
There
I still
is.
Have it. I haven't gotten rid of anything.
There's also a brown rice up.
Grain-free.
Okay, thank you
it
very much.
It says it on the bag.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions for the complainant? Okay, now Dr. Gonzalez, do you have any additional remarks or questions that you'd like to ask?
Can I say something? Her neighbor was in the office that day, and her and the neighbor were visiting. She never went in the kennel with me. Her husband did. And we got the dog walked out, and I showed that I had known him forever, so I thought we were friends. I showed him the incision, everything looked good, and he walked the dog out to the truck. And the parking lots, the truck was parked about 30, I paced it off just to get an idea, about 30 yards from my office. And I'm still concerned about the time frame. They need about 20, Tunnel Basin is about 20 miles away, 25 miles. So she would take an hour and a half to get there. Okay. And that's my concern.
Did you offer a necropsy?
Huh?
Did you offer a necropsy?
I would have, but she wouldn't talk to me. She was pretty upset. And I don't blame her. That's a nice dog, but I didn't have an opportunity to be nice to her or nothing. I've known him a long time.
Okay.
She wasn't involved in getting the dog out of the kennel. And I have one more question. How about the anesthetic? I can't smell anesthetic after you intubate a dog. Or 3 hours later, say you can still smell the anesthetic on a dog.
Any further questions for either the complainant or the respondent? Okay. So you can go ahead and step back now. This concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. Okay. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter.
Okay. Can I say one more thing? I've been doing this a long time and I haven't had a problem like that before. This is the first time I've come in front of the board in 45 years.
Thank you.
Get your files, sir.
Yes, your papers, Dr. Gonzalez.
Do I have to wait out there? Or?
We're going to discuss now.
Yeah. You can sit in the chair.
Sit right here.
Okay.
No priority?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, all right, so now here we have a discussion here. And I mean, when I'm reading this, the anesthetic protocol is just flat out horrible. There's no two ways to say that.
Okay.
I mean, we've been using this protocol for 40 years. This should have been left about 30 years in the past. This protocol is just, it's not adequate for anything. That can be a fine pre-med, but that is not going to be a good for full induction for all this. Butorphanol lasts between 1 to 6 hours, maybe. No post-operative pain meds. The amount of stress this dog was under after having his testicles cut off and having no pain control. This is horrible anesthesia. This is horrible surgical pain control. This is just not good. So I definitely want to know everybody's opinion, but this is old medicine that should have been left 40 years ago, 30, 40 years ago.
And I'm going to say that there has never been any problems with it. Yes, we are more conscious of providing less or more pain relief now than we were back then.
Yeah.
Some more than others, right? Because you don't necessarily see that there's pain happening.
No, yeah.
Right? So, but we know that, so I'm not, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I get that a lot, and especially from older customers,
mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of that way too. So,
this is broke. This is very broke.
Practices that offer pain management post-operatively as elective as optional.
And if an animal dies afterwards, that's probably going to be a complicating factor. I don't think you can say it from the front.
It didn't
the front
die
end.
If it was overwhelmed with pain. Right?
I don't know if you can say that, honestly.
I think you can.
But this is
because it
this
hasn't
is not
because it hasn't happened in 40 years. This is
we don't
45
know that.
Years.
We don't know
this,
that.
Yeah, we
do. That's just a testimony, but we can't say, oh, it hasn't happened in 40 years. That's not a testimony for anything. So, I mean, we can't claim
nobody
that.
Would have complained and brought a case to the board in 45 years.
Yeah.
If something had happened.
In a small town? Oh, yeah. All the time.
Payson's not that small a town.
I think more we recently. Still have doctors that do neuters without pain control.
And I think that's totally and below the standard of care.
One at a time, remember.
I can agree that you can feel that way. Mm-hmm. We cannot feel that way. That doesn't matter. I think we have to stick with if we're going to vote that that falls below the standard because there's no statute. It's going to have to be professionally acceptable procedures. So we can vote when we get there, mm-hmm. but there's no reason to keep discussing it because we're either going to agree or disagree.
Yeah, and that's fine. But I see major issues with this, and this animal died, and we don't have any other explanation, and I can say this is bad medicine.
Okay, but if you wonder why an animal died, then you don't have to wait for somebody to offer you a necropsy either.
No, we don't. But we also don't expect the owner to be the one to understand that stuff either. That's incumbent on the professional.
I don't necessarily
think it's a violation to not offer a necropsy. Yeah. But I think the necropsy could have been exculpatory here, but maybe, but.
But it doesn't sound like there was even an opportunity. Now, we have a lot of possibly. He said, she said in here. Yes. So I'm not saying one's right or wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that we are getting very, very different testimonies in this one. Yeah. So you're going to have to go off of what you think is right. But what we heard, at least on this, was there was no opportunity. There was no conversation after the dog died that would have allowed for the offering of a necropsy.
And I honestly don't see that as a violation. I don't want to make that a type of standard there. So I mean that's not one I was even considering looking at there. Like I said, I think it could have been helpful, like we always say, necropsies can be helpful, but I don't think that's a
with
failure.
Both parties.
Yeah, exactly.
Would
have
answered questions.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I mean but yeah that's not the that is not a violation I was even looking at there. But I mean the problems with the transcription and the actual medical records, the confusion in there, I'm having a lot of problems with this in general. There's a lot of issues going on here, and it's a lot of safety practice issues, honestly. I mean, I don't know if we're up to standards. I'm really concerned about that. This is, like, I've been doing this for 40 years. Do you know how much continuing education has changed in 40 years? I mean, drugs we have now that we use that are fairly standard, what didn't even exist back then? And so we need to update our standards as we go, and nothing was changed in 40 years.
Well,
we had that actually testimony.
But all of these drugs are still routinely used today.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they're routinely used today, but not in this manner, I would argue.
I think there's a lot of veterinarians that still use
and
it.
And
it
well, yeah, but that, and if they come in front of us, that's a different story, in my opinion. But if this is out there and it's being done, it's problematic. A lot of crimes are committed every day. I'm not saying this is a crime, but a lot of problems, things are done wrong every day. Unless you're caught on something, you can't really do anything about it.
Yeah.
We're seeing this in front of us, and this is old, horrible, bad medicine that needs to be updated, and I think it's a contributing factor to death.
We improve things as you measure them, right?
Huh?
So how do you measure this and improve it? You can't. It's just one person's opinion over another.
No, I mean, we can look at actual studies on these drugs. I mean, this is very similar to DKT. So, I mean, we can look at those kinds of things and the actual cardiac abnormalities that can happen with it. So we can look at different complications with this class of drugs used together. We don't have to have that kind of specific thing. We know that these combination of drugs can be used a proper way. I don't think this is a proper way of using them. And I don't think that's a proper procedure either.
Well, I think I would agree with you. I would not use that cocktail of drugs on my neuters. But again, there's how many thousands of veterinarians in this country, and that's what practicing is. We do things a little bit different. There is no statute that says it has to be propofol or hydro or what have you.
No, exactly.
So, but I think, like, if we take a step back, and I agree with you also with the pain meds, like, I would never send a dog home without it, but I also know that it happens many, many times. I know it happens regularly in shelters, not ours, but in shelters where they don't get pain medications. They do just fine, and they might even use this cocktail of drugs to put them under to do those, and they don't die in the kennels post-op. So, like, then I think the question becomes, like, is there something else going on with this dog? I think when we look at the medical records, to me, that's where we could definitely have a lot of improvement. Like, I'm very confused between the transcribed image, the transcribed folder that has the image of the surgical paperwork is completely different than the one that is sent in with the respondent's response. And so, where was that changed, and why do we have two different documents of the same thing?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's definitely records violations there. There's opportunities to grow in some of our choices, but I don't know if those are violations per se.
And I wouldn't say it's a violation to use that combination. I don't want to say that, but I think it's evidence towards, again, the gross negligence portion. I think that, I think it does support portions in that. Because again, all the factors together, I don't think there's a great protocol. The dog was sent home. I believe the dog was sent home in a unstable fashion. I mean, that just based on what I'm seeing here, this dog was not stable to go home. And again, it's all testimony, but I don't see anything that tells me the dog was. And with the protocols I'm seeing there, I can see that. I see more support from the client's perspective.
So if there's a chance that he went home unstable, still under the effects of anesthesia, you're saying he didn't need to study pain meds up with him?
No, it's a different thing. Sedation and pain are two different things. You can look at like acepromazine. I can sedate an animal with acepromazine. Anxiety is still going to be there. You're just not going to be able to see it. So you can't combine drugs like that. And it's all about pharmacokinetics and how it actually works.
All right. So on that, I thought part of the thing, I thought what wasn't part of the suggestions in any pain medications is the shortness of duration of those?
Of butorphanol, yeah. Well, ketamine too, that's really short. But yeah, butorphanol is a short duration, yeah.
Yeah. So how would they still be have prolonged anesthesia later on when these things are gone? Yeah,
well they do have exactly. Different parts of the drug they affect the receptors differently. So you will have analgesic properties for a shorter period of time than what you will have the sedative properties. So that does happen. So that is part of the process. And then the other part is was there something underlying in the dog mm-hmm. that prevented him from processing those drugs correctly. We don't have any indication here about blood work, whether that was offered, declined, whether that was part of the normal protocol. Again, we know that those types of procedures happen thousands and thousands of times without blood work and with no bad event.
And there's a lot of arguments on the anesthetic specialist realm of is blood work truly needed, because it can help save costs and bring things down
in those
healthy animals.
And if we had an underlying heart condition, which is entirely possible, you may not hear it with auscultation mm-hmm. and you would not see it reflected in your blood work. So those are things that you could not know prior to anesthetizing the dog.
No, but I don't think we can also use that very random case. I mean, you look at, again, with the grain-free diets, how many animals in the entire country suffered from DCM on those diets, and that was in, I think, the teens or low 20s number. So, I mean, we do have problems with grain-free diets, but it's still a very low number, and I can't imagine that would be a good argument for this case, saying, oh, well, we got hidden DCM.
No,
I think
that's
a good question there for sure.
Another thing to put into
the
realm. I agree.
Can we all agree that there's a medical records violation case to be made here, but there's nothing else to be made?
No, I can't agree to that. No, not at all. So I will make a motion to find a violation of ARS 3222.32.11 for gross negligence for discharging the dog in an unstable condition. Dog surgery ended at 9:52. The dog was discharged at 3:30 and still not recovered from anesthesia, according to the owner's complaint, which contributed to the death of the dog at 6 o'clock. I know there are some questions about the timeline, but the owner said that they got home at 5 o'clock. I think he's thinking they got home at 6 and the dog died immediately. Next one, I'm just skipping that one. ARS 3222.32.18 as it relates to AAC R311502E, failure to provide complete discharge instructions of a surgical patient and not documenting the medical record that discharge instructions provided.
Are we doing these one at a time?
Oh, we can. So I'll just do the first one, then I'll strike that second one.
I think we're going to have
shut that
attention
one down
on the first one.
Okay, we can do it. So I will do the ARS 3222.32.11 for gross negligence.
Second.
All those in favor?
Yeah, sorry. As I'm sitting here like,
we've discussed it.
We've discussed it. Yes.
Yeah. And I've already told him how I'm going to vote on this, so he knows. Right.
And that's fine. You're allowed
all
to.
Opposed.
Okay, so all those in favor, vote aye.
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 Aye. Opposed.
If you say it louder, it doesn't mean you get
yes.
to vote.
I just have a loud voice.
Madam Chair, I'd like to do a roll call.
Okay. Roll call.
Ms. Krieger.
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Nay.
Dr. James is a nay. Mr. Lowy?
Nay.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Nay.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Motion fails.
All right. Go on, people.
You had other ones.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we can do this, but I mean, so ARS 3222.32.18 as it relates to AAC R311502E. Failure to provide complete discharge instructions of a surgical patient and not documenting the medical record that discharge instructions provided.
Before anybody seconds that, it's 18 again.
Oh, yeah.
Read that.
Yeah, was that 21? Was it 21 we said?
No, 21's medical records. I don't, that 18 is like a domestic terrorism.
Yeah, that was a...
Yeah.
Yeah, was that
it
a,
is.
No, you're right, it was a...
A conspiracy to violate...
Yeah. Yeah.
Violating or attempting to violate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I think it was, that's not appropriate at all.
I think it was 21, right?
No.
No?
Are we looking at 18? It's either 12 or 18.
A 12, maybe that's what I was thinking. Okay.
But 12 is for ethics. And that's what that would be if it was a 501. Oh, no. Usually the 502s are 18.
Yes.
Okay, so let's see.
Failure to maintain adequate records? Isn't that what we're talking about?
Well, we have a discrepancy between two sets of records.
No, we're talking about 502E.
Was 502E for not providing discharge instructions.
And not documenting in the medical records, right? But that's not 18, violating or attempting to violate directly or indirectly or assisting or abetting violation or conspiracy to violate any provision in this chapter, rule adopted by, I mean, that's just excessive.
Well, it's violating or attempting.
You can find a different one besides 18.
Well, no, because it's violating. That's all it is. You don't have to read into the rest of it. It's just violating or, and everything after the or doesn't necessarily matter. It's just the way the law's written. But it still applies.
Okay. What about our 311-501? What about our 311-501 that states a veterinarian shall not make false statements on or alter any document, report, record, or report concerning treatment of an animal?
What was altered?
Pardon?
What was altered?
We had two different sets of medical records provided
on
the same.
No, I don't know if it's I don't know if it's altered,
no.
But no, 18 still fits, because if we take out the ors, we have violating a rule adopted by the board or written order of the board. So that fits there in 18. It's just the other stuff is also in there. But yeah, 18 does fit.
As it relates to
R311, going back to
502E. But Jane's starting a completely different motion. So I think we need to finish this one first.
Yeah, so that one will stand there.
Okay.
Then we can see what happens.
So that's the lack of discharge.
Yeah.
Okay. Not and I would second that.
Right. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Okay.
And then ARIS, a violation of ARIS 3222-3221 as it relates to AACR 311-502L7A. Failure to document in the medical record the concentration of PEN-G, ketamine, butorphanol, and xylazine that were administered to the dog. And yeah, because that's concentration, that's not volume then. Yeah.
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion passes.
All right, so. You guys can discuss everything else.
Okay.
So anybody else has any options?
Anything further?
Thoughts?
You covered it.
Okay.
Jane, I thought you had a concern about different medical records.
The section I referenced?
Did you not have a concern on the medical records? I thought it was... No.
Well, the discrepancy in the transcription, which is not necessarily...
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think that's medical records per se. It's just transcription stuff.
All right, any other motions?
Nope, we're good. So the board has voted to find violations. This concludes the matter, and Dr. Gonzalez, you will receive written action of the board's action, or written confirmation of the board's action shortly, and you can follow up with either Tracy or Victoria if you have any further questions. Okay, thank you for being here. And Ms. Divas, thank you for joining us by phone. You can now disconnect.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.